Each failure is a step closer to success. You're listening to Episode 7 of Learn With Us. I'm Ken.
And I'm Nikos. Learn With Us is a podcast for developers that want to learn how to teach programming.
So this episode, we are going to talk about one of your projects, Nikos, which is Test Recorder. Can you give us a little background as to what Test Recorder is?
Test Recorder, I decided to make because developers are lazy or they prefer to automate things that can be automated, like everybody's jobs. So what it is it records...
Wait, is this created for me, personally?
Well, if you want, you can think about that that way.
I haven't used it yet, so maybe I'll pick it up.
So the idea is that it records integration tests or acceptance tests, however you want to call them. Take the code it generates, you can copy and paste into your own integration test files, and then you can flesh them out from there with your own custom logic. What it basically does is records user interactions and allows them to be played back on top of the test framework of choice, and it performs some basic assertions like the visibility of elements.
Okay. So what kind of test frameworks does this support?
So the moment I have first-class support for Nightwatch, which is a node-based framework, and Ember CLI QUnit tests, acceptance tests.
Cool. And I'm reading on here that you hope to be able to support Protractor.
Tractor and Selenium Java code.
Cool.
I'm hoping I'm going to get some contributors to help with that, because I don't use them very often, those test frameworks.
Right. I've used Protractor with Angular, but it can be used across different front ends. But yeah, there's a lot of use for this type of tool. Mm-hmm. So have you put this to use in projects you're working on today, or are you still kind of building out the framework for this?
It's a mixture of both. I'm going to use it for some Ember training that I'll be doing this week or the next on testing, and I can't really bother to write all the tests by hand, so I'm just going to use this thing to record. Originally, it was a library you had to download via NPM, install into your project, and instantiate it. But what I'm doing now is I'm working on a Chrome extension that will do the same thing. You just click a button and the test recorder pops up.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I just realized my fan was going for the last 5 minutes, so I apologize.
Oh, I turned mine off, so I'm sweating like a pig in here.
Yeah. Cool. So you just press a button and it starts recording. And are all of the interactions that you do on a web page recorded, or are there certain actions that you don't record?
Well, at the moment it records input focus out, it records clicks, it records select changes. That's about it. Next thing I'll try and support is things like drag and drop, but the code that it generates is a bit interesting, shall we say. The code is a bit interesting.
Yeah. Now, does it also give you pixel precision? If you were to look at the code, would you know like which pixel on the screen the user would have clicked? Or the XY axis kind of stuff?
No, it generates CSS selectors for all that stuff.
Oh, okay. And I know that in Protractor, at least, I'm not familiar with Nightwatch, but I know with Protractor, if you targeted an element that was hidden beneath another element, if I remember right, that element on top would receive the click, like because it's using Selenium WebDriver. So I think it's like you can't actually navigate the DOM. You can just like tell Selenium this is the zone in which you need to click, but the click might not propagate down to the thing that you're trying to hit. Is that, do you ever have that issue with like Nightwatch or Ember CLI?
So far, I haven't encountered that issue.
Okay. Maybe that's just a Selenium thing that you don't need to worry about.
Yeah, well, I trigger events directly on the elements of choice. But, yeah, I guess that could be an issue. I guess some if this Chrome extension becomes popular, then people probably write those things as issues if they use it frequently.
Yeah. So when you run the recorder, does it generate a new file for each page that's navigated to? Or how, what's it look like?
It doesn't generate any files at all. All it does is it outputs code into the test recorder UI, and you copy that code, paste that code anywhere you want, just to keep the thing simple. And because I can't bother to do anything else.
Oh, okay. So it's outputted to the console?
It's outputted to the test recorder console. You can see what code it's generating while you interact with the page.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, there was another protractor tool that I'd used in the past that was similar to this. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't as robust as what yours is doing, where you'd actually have to take the information that outputted in the console and then write your test based on that information. Uh-huh. So this sounds like you don't really have to write anything. You might want to fine tune it after the fact, but
yeah,
you
could just definitely take it. You'll definitely have to fine tune it. I mean, it looks at. I mean, I tried running some of this stuff on various web pages, and the amount of code it generated was crazy. Like, I went to Stack Overflow and just started clicking on things, and it's like this mountain of code was generated because there's so many stuff on the DOM that's changing. So yeah, there's things you can do. You can add classes like do not record to various elements, and it will not record anything in that DOM tree.
Oh, and nice.
If it generates assertions if things change, if another thing changes, then it doesn't write out that code.
So if you're pretty invested in a project, setting this up for the first pass could take you quite a bit of time to get everything right, you know, to get the exclusions in place and whatnot. But after you have all that set up, like, is it pretty seamless once you start using it, like, daily?
Well, you only really need to use the exclusions if it's something that is changing a lot and generating a whole bunch of code. It's not something you'd normally use that much.
Right. So if you're targeting an active website like Stack Overflow, where there's lots of components on the page at one time, there's a good reason to have exclusions. But if you're just building a basic CRUD app,
yeah,
you might not need to do any exclusions like that.
Yeah, I mean, this app is kind of designed to be used once at the start of a project, and then you just write your own tests after that. So say I'm on a project, it doesn't have any integration tests, you could just fire this thing up and you'd get some code, and then you could copy and paste that and then forget about the test recorder.
Cool. So what do you have for documentation?
I have a README file on the GitHub repository, and I have a couple of videos on YouTube.
Okay. And the videos on YouTube, they handle both Nightwatch and Ember CLI
yep.
use cases?
They demonstrate cool. how to use it with both framework. The code actually works exactly the same under the hood for whatever test framework you want to use. It just changes okay. the output code.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. So if anybody wanted to get started using this, how would they do it? Where would they go?
Get started? They can just follow the README, which has a lot of instructions. So there's an NPM thing you have to download and then import it, and that's about it. In the next few weeks or so, I will finish the Chrome extension, which I'm currently having a bit of issue with right now.
So the package name is called Test Recorder in NPM, test-recorder?
That's correct.
Okay, and then, so NPM I save dev test-recorder. So you save it to your project
yeah.
at the project level.
That's right.
Could you run it as a global package as well?
I don't think so, because you have to actually import the code at the moment.
Oh, okay. So it does read through your package or your current project.
You have to basically do import test recorder from test recorder, and then you just write new test recorder, and it will then add itself to the page.
Oh, okay.
I actually gave a talk about this at one of the Ember meetups, and then one of the audience asked a question, can you make it a Chrome extension? And that was a good idea, so I decided to go and do it.
Oh, so there's a Chrome extension for this.
I'm making a Chrome extension for it.
Yes, all right. So is that meetup talk? Do you have a recording of that?
It might be on Pusher. I can double check for you guys.
What is Pusher?
Pusher is a company that does messaging, and they have a bunch of talks.
Pusher. I am not familiar.
Pusher, and then I think it's... Let me just double check the URL here.
We empower all developers to live... What is it? Oh, great. How to use TypeScript with Node. Oh, this is a treasure trove. blog.pusher.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they go around various meetups and record their talks with professional people. Their professional audio and video producers.
Oh, that's interesting. Great. I love it. Okay, so you're working on a Chrome extension.
Mm-hmm.
And you have the test recorder NPM package. Any works to have a Visual Studio Code extension that helps manage Nightwatch scripts, or?
Nah, for me it's just something that lives inside the browser and you use it while using the app, so it's purely browser based technology.
Cool. And you're taking pull requests?
Yeah, I am.
And how many issues?
I had one issue from five of the issues on there are mines, and one from another user who said, please support IE11, and then I'd says, that's a good idea. Then I change my mind and says, nah, can't be bothered. it just runs in Chrome.
Yeah, and you have 16 stargazers, and hopefully after this episode, we'll have 100.
Yeah, so that would be good.
We're gonna get there. So the GitHub account is Quantum Information, and then the project is Test Recorder.
Yes. I suppose I could use my account creation bot and then auto start it, but then GitHub would object.
Yeah, I would object to that as well.
You may not use those stars automatically and auto generate your code. You are banned, comrade.
Sorry. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So. What kind of things are you looking? You're adding protractor support in the future, and you're creating the extension. What's missing that you wish you had that you don't have yet?
Well, I want to make the interface drag and drop so that people can get out of the way of the actual app, because the test recorder is opaque at the moment. I tried making it transparent to mouse clicks, but there were some problems with actual making the buttons. It messed up the app, the test recorder UI when I made it transparent.
So it's a layer that sits on top of the UI.
Yeah. So I want to add some shortcuts that basically shrink, can shrink the UI, minimize it, and also you can drag and drop the interface. And I'm just double checking the issues here. I also want to support Ember test helpers, which are things that are added at development time and then removed. They allow you to target elements without having to worry about changing the names and IDs and things like that. That's all I have right now.
That's great. So how does this play into your teaching testing to your students?
Well, it...
Is this a quick way to get them up and running and to show them what a test suite might look like?
Well, I want to be able to get them to... You know, if you have, say, a big project that doesn't have any tests, then they can start using this to kind of motivate them to generate more tests quicker. And also, I just... making this for myself because it makes me, I can write tests quicker as well for projects that doesn't have tests. And it's also quite a good technical exercise as well.
Sure. And you're more likely to write tests if you had something helping you. Because most people will forego writing tests if it becomes complicated and it's a hurdle that they have to overcome, right? And this is... This reduces the friction, allows you to get tests done quicker.
Yeah.
So that's a benefit. That's great. So you're gonna teach your students how to use this tool.
Yeah.
Are there any other test suites that you are looking at to do something similar to, or other than integration tests? Or
the way I've designed it. The way I've designed it, it's very easy to add other frameworks because every test framework support in this test recorder has extended interface called an iCode generator, and then people just go and insert what the framework code generates. So it's very easy to extend using TypeScript.
And you've used these frameworks, Ember CLI and Nightwatch, on other projects before you started.
Yeah.
And what kind of code coverage did you have in those projects?
The Ember stuff was pretty high. Nightwatch has just been for some personal projects.
Yeah. Like, and what kind of is Nightwatch a pretty popular framework? I'm not familiar, so.
And not really. There's only one guy behind it, so I don't know. I've not used it. Okay. I've not used it for a bit. So, what have you been up to this week or so?
Oh, last week or so. Let's see, work-wise. I've been digging into some old Angular 1 code. Been stumbling into some old libraries, Angular-based libraries that everything seems to be upgrading to Angular 4 or, the newest version of Angular. So all these old libraries are kind of getting the cobwebs on them, and... I have to go back and read, documentation that might be outdated for the current version that's compatible with Angular 1.
So
it's been kind of interesting trying to poke around. The one library I've been using for a while or had been using for a while is SmartTable, and it's kind of a simple way to add grids to an Angular Bootstrap type website or application, and the SmartTable documentation, it's pretty blatant and obvious that they're like, we're switching to a vanilla JavaScript or React based framework approach rather than Angular.
Yeah.
So things are changing, and it's quite interesting to see where people are putting their efforts.
Yeah.
who used to might be interested in Angular 1 are now focused on React, or you know, some people that might have been into Ember are now focused on Vue. It's really weird to see things how things are progressing.
Yeah. So if I was going to write a smart table, I wouldn't write it in a framework. I'd make it all vanilla, just because I can't refactoring it.
I think that's probably the best approach. And there's things that I've written in Angular 4 that it doesn't really need Angular. It's just it's an Angular app that I've written just plain JavaScript.
Yeah.
And then you wrap it around.
Yeah.
You know, wrap Angular around it, which is perfect. You know, it's not. We don't have to get into these frameworks if we want to customize a view. It just do what you would have done in JavaScript. The view is there for, you know, or the framework might be there for routing or state management or something like that.
Yeah.
But if you can get away with writing vanilla JavaScript, then do it. The one thing that I do like about, you know, bringing in frameworks, and I've said this before, is that you are now, you don't have to test, you know, everything from the top layer to the bottom. You know, you can test only the pieces that you've coded, and you know, the Angular core team is going to test that Angular works out of the box.
Yeah.
So, yeah, testing can be a different approach when you use a framework.
Yeah.
So that's what I've been up to. Looking at old code, but it's been a lot of fun actually. Today I was just doing a little bit of refactor, and then I realized, oh wow, we really added some extra lines to this code. So I added maybe like 200 lines of code. I stripped away about 600 lines of code, and I felt good. You know, that's
a good feeling.
That's
yeah.
what you should do if you can. Remove code.
What would be the? It's like clearing clutter out in your house, isn't it? Minimalism.
Well, yeah. So, just like, you know, if you have clutter in your house, you're going to trip over it, right? If you have old code that doesn't need to be there, it's going to confuse you and cause you pain. So, get rid of code. I think the old adage is, what is it? Like fewer bugs from less code, or there's fewer bugs in no code or something like
that. Yeah, less is more.
Yeah. So, if you write code, try to write as little as possible, but don't get too clever. I mean, that's one thing that also I was reading through some of the code and like, oh, we got too clever with that. We were doing some substring stuff and we didn't need, you know, just... If it's a string literal, let it be a string literal. Don't try to parse the string and you know, extract the title of a page out or something like that. Just store it as a string literal. Save yourself the headache. Yeah, you're going to have another variable set with something in it, but I'd rather do that than try to get creative with my, you know, string parsing techniques and regex and whatever. So,
yeah.
Don't get too clever.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of my week. What did you do this last week? What have you been up to?
I've made a semi New Year's resolution. I'm sort of, when I'm coming back from work, I'm trying not to sit in front of the television and watch TV. I'm trying to write a novel.
Oh yeah, you were talking about this about a year ago, I think, right? You were talking about maybe not a novel. It was a JavaScript book about like space travel or something like that.
Oh, that has been sitting on the top shelf gathering dust in the moment.
Okay, so this is a new thing.
This is a newish thing. It's a sci-fi novel.
Cool.
I would definitely like
to read your...
Yeah, I'm probably going to put the first... like the first few pages or so on YouTube, and I'll get a voice actor to read it. Because
great.
If you get the right voice actor,
I'll do some voices.
Yeah,
let me be the character.
Yeah. The right voice actor can make all the difference in a reading. I personally don't read paper that much. I buy audiobooks and listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
I just find it much nicer. Actually, I find it's a good way to get to sleep, actually. I sit and listen to a story, and then I find myself not being able to concentrate in a story. That's a sign that I'm ready to go to sleep. It works quite well.
Yeah, I've listened to a few audiobooks, and I can't say that I retain that much information from them. But the nice thing is you can easily go back a chapter and spend an hour listening to that chapter over again. It's not, I mean, I listen to a lot of podcasts, so listening to a chapter of a book is not that big of a time suck for me, especially when I'm traveling in the car or whatever.
Yeah.
But finding the time to sit down and read the book, especially with kids and an active lifestyle, it's challenging. So reading books, I prefer the audio version more than anything.
Yeah. I also got a newer camera and a good lens from my YouTube. So I'm going to be thinking about what I'm going to make for our next video. I'm thinking I'm going to make a video called How to Be Programmer and Healthy.
Oh, yeah?
So we're talking about, like, exercise and seating positions and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, so do you use a standing desk?
I use a mixture. I use standing desk, I use a seat, and I use a beanbag.
Oh, that's interesting.
Leaning, I have a sort of leaning standing desk at home.
So how long has it been since you started using the standing desk?
Well, actually, I bought a standing desk, and because it was taking so much room in my place in London, I sold it. Now I just use a Mac, and you can stand up, sit down with the Mac. You don't actually need a standing desk. You just need something you can put the height of the Mac on top of. If you've got full setup monitors and that, you need a standing desk. But if you just have a Mac, and that's what I do all my development on, without an external monitor, then you don't need a standing desk.
Yeah, I've tried putting it on like the kitchen counter and just standing there and working, or on the dining table. But I just can't find a groove with my arm position and whatnot. Maybe having an adjustable desk would be better suited for me.
Yeah, the sweet spot is actually having a leaning desk. So you stand upright, but if you imagine you've got the vertical line, what you do is you stand back and lean up to 20 degrees, and then your feet lean on a similarly angled block. And then your desk also has a slight angle. That is the best position to be in.
Huh.
And they're actually...
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, they're actually doing... Well, because when you stand straight up, there's a lot of pressure on your lower back because it's vertical, right? Same way you're sitting. But when you're leaning, then it's much, much reduced. And they're actually doing... They do studies about this in Norway and stuff like that, like what kind of office would look like. And the ideal office would basically look like lots of boulders and desks and stuff where you have different seating positions. It's not actually, there's no one seating position that's better than either. It's the variety of seating positions.
We could go sit at the park on a boulder and we'd have better posture.
Well, you need a boulder plus where the laptop is leaning, so you do need a purpose-built facility, but it'd be very expensive and no one's going to actually build it, but it's a good proof of concept.
Well, I'm thinking maybe the Google Glass, and then we have some sort of Air keyboard, futuristic sci-fi stuff, or what's how come I can't think of the movie that Tom Cruise did, the whole handy wavy thing on the glass.
Yeah, there's nothing.
Minority Report. That was it.
I don't think we'll ever have anything as precise as a keyboard in human technology.
Yeah. I'm really interested in finding a better work posture, but I've tried the standing desk, not really benefited from it. But I think if I had something that was adjustable, and I think like you said, if I had it tilted in a way, then it might be better. And then if I had something for my feet to to sit on,
what you can do, what you can do is you can just make something, right? You can get make some kind of well, what I actually do at home, I have this sort of high backed chair, and what I do is I lean it on top of another bit of furniture, so the high back chair is an angle, and then I just push it right up next to the desk and lean on that while I'm working. It does the same thing.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I should try that.
And then I have something for my feet to sit at the same angle, so that I'm not pushing my ankles down to the ground at an obtuse angle. I'm leaning against something with the same angle as the leaning back of the chair, and it really, really is comfortable. Much more comfortable than sitting or even standing or even lying or even sitting down on a beanbag. Beanbags are okay, but they're only for like 20 minutes or so.
Yeah. I think I can enjoy a beanbag for a little bit, but yeah, I might get lost in it. I won't be able to get out.
Yeah, it can happen. You wake up, you feel really stiff.
Cool. All right, well, that's interesting. I'm going to go find out how to make my desk better. Cool. Well, I think we're about at our time point.
Yep.
So, let me get my script.
It's been fun as usual.
Yes, it's been fun. And thank you for listening to Learn With Us. You can find us on Twitter at Learn With Us Pod. And go ahead and head over to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week, folks.